Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cosmic Circus Review. My name is Vin. With me, as always, is John.
Hello.
And today, we're doing Nosferatu, like, retrospective. So we're going to talk about the 1922 movie by F.W. Murnau. We're going to talk about the 1979 movie by Werner Herzog. John,
And we
how you
might,
feel like this?
and we might touch on the name of the one a bit too. We might.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about that. John, how are you feeling today? You excited about these movies?
I'm interested to talk about them. I am interested to talk about it.
Okay, because
I am.
I've heard only two things from you, which was one, then I'm trying to watch the first movie, and then number two, then I'm trying to watch the second movie.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was a bit effortful for you. Did you enjoy these movies?
It's not that it was an effort. It was because, now to give a little bit of context, I wasn't just watching these movies. It is award season right now, and we are in the thick of voting for what is the best in everything right now. So I have watched not just these movies. I have watched probably 10 movies over the weekend.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. So, and on top of trying to write, and on top of trying to make money, and on top of trying to be a person in a wheelchair, and on top of being a dog owner, and on top of being a human. Anyway.
And on top of being my friend. Because even earlier in this week, we had a moment where you were just talking to me like a pal. So you make time for everything.
Make
So that's
time for
amazing, John.
Everything, and
good for you.
I feel like Nosferatu is draining my soul. So anyway, let's go.
Let's go. All right. So we have Nosferatu, 1922, A Symphony of Horror by F.W. Murnau, screenplay by Henrik Galeen, based on Dracula by Bram Stoker, of course, starring Max Schreck as the titular Count Orlok in this movie. Cinematography by Franz Arno Wagner, and music by Hans Erdmann. Now, of course, with these silent movies, there's different scores. The version I listened to had some of Hans Erdmann's music and also had some other score by Bernd Heller. So, but there's different versions with different scores, and that'll affect your experience. Yeah.
I genuinely have no idea which one I watched.
That's fine. That's fine.
I found a version, and it was on like an archive website.
Yeah.
I watched it
yeah.
on there, but I genuinely have no idea like if it was the right music or not.
I don't think there's a right one. There might be some that like you like better or not, but with these silent films, it's kind of up to interpretation what kind of music you put on it and how it accentuates the music. I just want to mention real quick, recently there's a new death metal score by Josef von Bissum. I haven't heard that one, but I think it would be really cool to check out if anyone's interested. Death metal.
Death metal for Nosferatu?
Yeah.
And you're just now bringing this up because
I discovered it this morning.
I went and rewatched it just for that experience.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find it online and I'll send it to you because that would be pretty cool. Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about this 1922 for movie first. So this was your first time watching it, right?
It is. I've never seen. My only context of Nosferatu is like what I've seen like in like a kind of imagery, like a lot of horror
pop
movies.
Culture. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of horror movies and pop culture reference the look, or they'll use the footage in like different frames. My earliest memory
Hot Frosty. Hot Frosty uses a shot from Nosferatu 1922.
I mean, what is a Nosferatu plot without bringing up Hot Frosty, right? My earliest memory of seeing the vampire, that like version of the vampire, is, you're gonna laugh, Ernest Scared Stupid.
I've never even heard of that. What's that?
You've never heard of the Ernest movies? Like the really like. So there was a guy named Jim, I think his name is Jim Varney. He was like a over the top personality from like the 80s and 90s that played a character named Ernest. Like this like redneck hillbilly, stupid character that like gets in his shenanigans. It's very physical comedy. It's like like very corny physical comedy for kids, you know?
I understand.
And
this looks like something I would find at the video store as a kid.
But it came out theatrically. It actually came out theatrically, but I went to go see Ernest Scared Stupid in theaters, actually. Like,
wow.
That is like, well, it's like gateway horror for kids.
Oh, cool.
Gateway horror for kids, and it's actually kind of creepy. It's actually kind of creepy. Like, what is it, Dan Merle? You know Dan Merle? The film
yeah,
critic?
Yeah, on YouTube, yeah.
Even Dan Merle referenced this film when bringing up things that, like, kind of like traumatized him as a kid.
All right.
Like, there's, like, little bits of, like, horror in this film that, like, that give you that flavor. as a child, you know, before you understand what horror is. But like it was either in the credits or I can't remember where, but I remember seeing that vampire in the film. Now I don't remember where, but I remember seeing it and even thinking then, that is a creepy looking dude. So Max Shrek?
Max Shrek, that's right.
Man, the way he looks is
unbelievable.
Perfection.
Yeah.
Perfection. And I'm not aware of the history. I don't know if he like had like a like if there was some kind of like condition that made him look like that. Or if he actually just like
That's makeup, dude. You can find what he actually looks like. He looks like a normal guy.
Well, I can tell you this, they did a great job on him.
Yeah, that's all prosthetics and makeup. Yeah.
Great job. It was amazing work for 1922.
Yes. I think we've talked about it before. So a couple of years ago, I did a huge deep dive into silent German horror. This exact stuff. I watched over 20 movies from the era, all silent horror. So this is not one of my favorites. I think F.W. Murnau, I think this was one of his first great ones. Then he builds on this. He had a great movie in 1924 called The Last Laugh and then 1926 Faust. And those, I think, are masterpieces. So if you like this, anyone watching, if you like this, go check out his other movies, his later movies, because he just gets better and better and better as he goes. But yes, the whole era, the German Expressionism, that stuff that inspired Tim Burton, everything looks phenomenal. The sets, the costumes, the makeup. This is very tame compared to what came later and other things, like even Caligari or Waxworks or Metropolis or anything like that.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Well, the one thing that I can say about this film is that I, you know, having seen all three versions now, I do think this is still the best version because the way that it's designed and crafted, it fits for that era. The story, the look, the feel. The one thing that I kept thinking when I was like, because, like, I don't watch a lot of silent films. I've seen a few, but I could do better in that department.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I was thinking about is, you know, the way they shot it back then in 1922 with that camera that they had, you know, it gives everything a stop motion aesthetic.
Yes.
You
know, sometimes they literally use stop motion, literally sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes they do. And it gives the whole film an extra layer of creepiness.
Yeah.
That fits the movie so perfectly. So perfectly. Yeah. There's one sequence where they go downstairs and he's like, you know, they're in the ship. They go downstairs and he just like raises up.
Yeah.
And the way that it is filmed, it is so disturbing and just so beautifully done.
Yeah, there's some really, really great stuff in this. One of my favorite things is because it was black and white, they choose to color tint it. Did you see a version with color tints?
I did not, no.
Yours is 100% black and white?
And I have no regrets.
Okay, that's fine.
Mainly because I dig the black and white. The shadow play. The shadow play in this movie is incredible. Yeah. I love the shadow play in it.
But some silent films, when you watch the restoration, sometimes they put color tints and they change the colors based on the emotion or the mood or the atmosphere of that scene. So it plays with color, even though it's a black and white movie, but it plays with color in a way to affect your emotion. And I really like seeing when they do that. So that's one thing I really liked about this. Also, I love the facial performances because they're not speaking. So everything they're expressing is through these like very dramatic facial expressions, all the hair, the makeup, it's all like over the top. It's so theatrical. And I love these movies for that because it's so
great,
crazy.
Yeah,
bananas.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a great performances for being quiet. And the one thing that I noticed rewatching it, because now I haven't seen the new one and like they all follow the same kind of like structure, all the same structure with like different, like, with different ingredients thrown in, but it's mostly the same, like, tell.
Yeah.
And I think this is just an amazingly crafted film for that time. And it's so disturbing with so little.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it doesn't do a lot. It doesn't do a lot to get to you. I like the, you know, I mentioned on the pod, I think. No, I didn't mention on the pod. We mentioned it off pod last week.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought that like you know, that the new version like owed a lot to Bram Stoker's Francis Ford Coppola. And then like I watched this film and I'm like, no.
Okay.
This film, you know, owes like Coppola owes everything to Nosferatu. You know wow. what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because well, the thing is that there's the original novel, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Then there's Nosferatu, right. which takes some elements but is also a little bit original. And those are like the foundations on which everything is built. Even the 1979 movie, they take the Nosferatu movie, but they take the names from the book. And then Bram Stoker's Dracula, they try to be more authentic to the book, but they still take some elements from. So that it's always, they're all in conversation. All it's in always, conversation. Yeah.
It's always mixing and matching and stuff like that. And Coppola did a lot of things similar to Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. Shadow play.
Yeah.
Visual aesthetics, like just playing with like image, like playing with like imagery, like the visual.
Yeah, Coppola's visuals are insane. They're so cool in that movie.
They're so cool, and I just think this might be the quintessential vampire movie. Like,
I agree, and I think because like you just said, because it's that silent film, because it's shot with these kind of like these cameras, and it's kind of like grainy, and there's like shadows on the edges of the frame. It all just adds to it. It makes it even creepier.
It's great. Right? It's great. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think this story, this film would be good in any other era. I think it is good. Like, it is the perfect film for the perfect time, for the perfect era that just, like, matched the horror with the right time and the right place. Mm-hmm. It is so good. It is a very good horror film.
Now, something interesting to bring up, because I have not seen the new movie, but I know Robert Eggers likes to play with eras. He likes to play with time periods. He likes to use vintage techniques. Mm-hmm. Does he, in the new movie, is he able to kind of recapture some of this vintage feel, or does he do something completely different?
So the way that I'll describe the new one is that, you know, I'm going to first quote James, like James, sorry, James,
my James brain Preston Poole. Our guy James
Preston Poole. I'm going to quote him. It is very similar to King Kong, Peter Jackson, where it like takes the 1930s, 40s King Kong and kind of like updates it to a degree. At the same time, what I will say is that I'm going to move on a little bit to Werner Herzog, to his 1979 film. First off, the man needs to stick to documentaries. Just want to say that. I think the 1979 version was a slog. I could barely handle it. I thought it was terrible. I almost fell asleep 3 times. I was never scared.
And you're watching this in the middle of the day. It's not even nighttime.
It doesn't matter. It's terrible. If I watched it at night, I would have fallen asleep. It's boring. It's a boring film. It's not good. I'm sorry. Don't watch it. Like the one thing that I will say, the cinematography in it is great. The cinematography,
okay, sure, yeah,
very good in that 1929 version.
I like the music whole, also. I thought the music was good.
The whole film is an absolute slog. It's just so insanely boring. So mm-hmm. boring. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to 2024, which is. Then this movie stressed me out in the best way possible.
Good.
The way Robert Eggers did it is that he did a lot of the same things as the first, but he used his best tools to make it his own. And the one thing that Robert Eggers is good at is atmosphere. He's very good at making thick, unrelenting, stressful, gripping your like armrest mm-hmm. atmosphere and the whole movie from the very first frame. Like you're just like, bro, I am tense right now. I'm so insanely tense. I feel like we got screeners as awards and I rewatched it during the day, and I was still insanely tense.
Wow.
And so the one thing that I can say is that compared to Werner Herzog's film is that Eggers understands what was there and what made the first one good and brought his flavor to it without hurting the source material.
Yeah. And that's the best way, in general, that's the best way to do a remake. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's little subtle changes, but they only add, they never subtract. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense, it only adds to it. Where compared to Werner Herzog's, I just felt like it didn't really add anything, but just try to be like a horror drama.
I will say, and hold on, let me go through the credits for just 1 second. So, Nosferatu the Vampire, 1979, by Werner Herzog, directed and written by, based on both the novel and the 1922 movie, starring Klaus Kinski as the vampire. Music by Popol Vuh. I thought this one, I thought it, the ending was better. I liked the ending a lot, where I feel the Lucy character, she gets more to do. She's a little more active in her strategy to take down the vampire. She sacrifices herself. She makes this, she makes like a circle around the Jonathan character. But then at the end, Jonathan escapes and he's the new vampire. So the idea is that like it goes on forever. I like that ending a lot. Sorry for spoilers.
Well, you'll notice whenever you do get to the 2024 is that there was a little bit of, not everything, but like, you know, Eggers kind of borrows little bits from both.
Great. That's really good to hear.
Like even the, what's her name? Lucy?
Lucy, yeah.
Even that character gets a lot more to do in the new one.
Great.
I think even in Herzog's version, she's more central.
Okay.
Because like the guy,
Jonathan,
in number two, even in number one, was more of a central character, I think, than
always. Yeah. Yeah.
Than her, but like in this one, Holt is more of a supporting character, in my opinion.
Okay. That's really cool to hear. I have an interesting question for you. You probably know Anya Taylor-Joy was originally supposed to be Lucy. Do you think it works with Lily Rose Depp, or would it have been better with her?
She is like amazing in this movie.
Great. Okay. That's really good to hear.
At first, it didn't work for me because it felt a little melodramatic.
Okay.
With the performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second act kicks into gear.
That's really where things get more interesting. Yeah.
And it's just, it goes places neither movie has gone.
Okay. That's great. That's
neither
really good.
Movie has gone. And I don't want to really go too far into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes into places that I was like, whoa, what?
Okay.
What I like about the new one, and it kind of hinted in number two and number one.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of a spiritual element in the third one than there is in the other two. Like it plays on the forces of hell a little more than the other two. Like, and which is an Eggers thing to do. Like, where he brings a little bit of supernatural flavor into the film. So there's a little bit of that going on.
That sounds really good.
It's pretty incredible. The Werner Herzog version, the one thing that I do appreciate about both of them is that they touch on the Voyage of the Demeter
right
a little bit, you know. And I feel like it kind of makes you want to hearken back to that film that came out last year.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it, but was it good?
It's not. It's not good.
Because it's such a shame, because that movie, I don't know if you know, was in development hell for like 25 years. They spent so long trying to make that one movie. So long. And it stinks, apparently.
It is bad, but what you can tell is the way the vampire looks in it, mm-hmm. you can tell that even the Voyage of the Demeter was trying to take inspiration from that version, from the Nosferatu version of the character, where it's bald, it's got the ears, mm-hmm. like it looks like a bat, almost.
Yeah.
You know, without wings. So I love how that first Nosferatu film almost inspired Dracula going forward for almost a decade.
Yeah, yeah, it's iconic. It really is. If you look at the 1920s and 30s, there are actually several Dracula movies. Nosferatu isn't the only one. Bela Lugosi isn't the only one. There's some others, but I think Nosferatu really is the one that cemented it. Then you have Bela Lugosi, and those are like the two, like the yin and the yang kind of. One is like more horror based. One is more like Americanized, cartoony almost. And those are like the two. I personally prefer the German ones. Yeah,
I do too. What is your thoughts on Gary Oldman and his hair?
I haven't seen it in a few years, but I think the movie's extremely well made. but I'm not a huge fan. I don't know. It's really tough because I think I like vampires, but there's just something about this Dracula story specifically. It just never clicks with me. I'm not sure what it is. I think the one I like the most might be that Nosferatu 1922. But I've seen so many versions of this Dracula story, and I've read the book, I think, twice. And it just, I don't know, there's something about it that never clicks with me. But Frankenstein, I'm a huge Frankenstein fan. Yeah.
I'm very jealous. Well, I'm about to get to that too. I'm very jealous of that, by the way, because like I've never read Bram Stoker's Dracula, but one of the first books I ever read was Frankenstein. It's one of the first books that I ever read. I loved it.
As a kid,
Loved
one of the first books you read as a kid. It's not an easy book.
I read Frankenstein. Yeah, my family was pretty impressed. Like even when I was younger. Because I read hard books like at a very early age. I read like Frankenstein, The Call of the Wild, Journey to the Center of the Earth. Like
Wow,
I read
classic.
a lot of classics at a very early age. Like books that were not very easy, and it was, you know, I should read more now than I do, but I read a lot as a kid. And Frankenstein was one of the first ones that I read, and I remember sitting in my room, like younger, and just being completely captivated by that story. There's just something timeless about the horror of the novel. And it's accessible, and it doesn't feel overbearing, even for a kid.
And
Like,
I
in
love
my
the
opinion.
structure. I love the structure of the Frankenstein book, how it's like there's a story within a story within a story. You know, there's like letters and journal entries, and you keep changing the narrator, you keep changing the point of view. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, because you go from like you go from Frankenstein to the monsters, like, and you kind of like switch back and forth, right? Yeah,
And there's also the captain who finds the body at the beginning, right? So there's all these different points of view. Oh God, I love that book. I love that book, Frankenstein.
I love the atmosphere. Like, there's an atmosphere of dread all through that novel, where like you're just waiting, like where it all leads to the finale, where the monster finally tracks him down and all that stuff. And
Yeah,
honestly,
they
there's a
and they reunite at the end. Yeah, reunite.
and it's amazing, even in Nosferatu, and almost every version that's been made, there's an element of that too, this dread,
Yeah.
unrelenting dread of the monster approaching. As it like crosses into the city, but like crossing the ocean to come into the new, to come home to his new home. The one thing that I will say that I like a little bit of the new one, and again, I'm trying to be vague because like I know you haven't seen it, and I don't want to give too much away to you, is I feel like this one does the plague the best, the plague aspects, because every single version has like a plague the closer he gets. Like it's like the more he gets closer, the worse things get in the city. There's just like there's this conversation about the shadow through stuff, like the more he gets near. This version does that the best, in my opinion.
Okay, great. I'm really excited to
That
hear that.
it does that version the best. But of all the versions of that character, of the role, Mad Shrek just cannot be outmatched, can't be outdone. I think it's just hard to replicate that look, that creepy vibe that he gave off. Kind of like a brown recluse coming out of a shadow. It's just such a creepy character. And great film, man. It was a good
That's
idea to
great.
watch this.
I'm really glad. I guess I'm sorry for forcing you through the 1979 movie, but I really think it's interesting to compare and contrast all the different versions, right? Successes and failures. And I think there are things in the 79 movie that I do appreciate compared to 22, but 22 is the classic for a reason, right?
I don't regret watching it. Like I
Okay.
watched it just fine. It's just a slog. It's just
Yeah.
I'm not really familiar with a lot of Herzog's
Me
narrative
neither.
work.
I need to, but I'm not.
I know he's a great documentarian, and for some reason he hates chickens. For some reason,
What?
have you not heard about this?
No.
So a friend of mine showed me this. It's so funny. And for anybody watching on YouTube, Go look for it yourself. It cracks me up. There's a video, very infamous, Werner Herzog ranting about chickens. Like he can't stand the animal chicken.
Okay.
It's very funny. It's so funny. I
Okay,
think
I will look this up.
it's either chickens or turkeys. It's one of
Poultry, some kind of poultry. Okay.
it's so funny. It's so funny.
All right, I looked it up. One more thing I want to add.
But
I had in my notes for Nosferatu 1979. It kind of ties into what you were saying. In my notes, a little more positive. I said, it's similar. It's kind of dreamlike. It's slow. It's meditative, and it reminded me a little bit of Blade Runner, and that you have to be in the mood for it. Because if you watch Blade Runner expecting like an action-packed, like awesome, no, it's not that. And this is not some action-packed Dracula vampire movie either. This is very slow and meditative and kind of thoughtful, but this does not,
I don't
it
think it
doesn't.
works for I don't think it works for the character. I don't think it works, and I don't think that person and the character is scary at all.
No, he's creepy. He's creepy in a way. It's different, but.
The thing is, look, I feel like the way that it's adapted, and I think this is why I think Eggers has it figured out better than him. Herzog like me adapted it straight. Like the character, I'm not talking about like the movie, but he adapted that vampire straight. Like it was just like ripped out from 1922 and then put in color.
Yeah, really,
And
that's how the movie feels, really.
I don't think it works that way. I don't think it works. I think that actor does not give off the vibe of
Interesting.
Nosferatu.
Interesting.
I don't
Okay.
think he's particularly scary. I felt no suspense at all the entire time I watched him.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Now
It's
in
kind of like a
comparison,
remake for the sake of a remake, like saying, here's the shot, here's the shot, here's the shot. Look, we made it again.
no, I don't think it's a shot for shot remake. I think
Pretty close.
that character is a straight
Okay.
remake
Yeah.
of that character.
Yeah.
Like I feel like they didn't change much about him. And they didn't get the best actor for it, I think.
That's a
There's
hot
no.
take. A lot of people like his performance.
Well, when you, Bob, I think
Your
when you see
opinion
the
is
new
valid.
version,
Yeah.
I think when
Yeah.
you see the new version, you'll see what I mean. Like,
Who's the actor in the new one?
it's a Skarsgård. I can't remember which one, but it is a
Of course it is.
Skarsgård.
Of course it is.
But think about the new.
Bill Skarsgård. Yeah.
So Bill Skarsgård, the way he did it, and again, I'm going to be big because they hold it back. They hold it back. But the one thing that I think Eggers understands is that you're adapting. You're adapting. What worked in
Great, great, great.
1922,
Yeah.
what worked in 1922 is not going to work in 2024.
Yeah.
So, and same thing in 1929. I don't think what worked in 1922 works in 1929. Now, if somebody disagrees with me, that's fine. That's fine. It's my opinion. Get over it.
John, let me tell you something real quick. I know you love David Chen and his podcast, right? Have you heard of the podcast Right Along with Robert Cargill?
I have.
Have you listened to it?
I'm
Yeah.
messy, Robert Cargo, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm
So,
like he does a fantastic best, by the way. If you ever do go to it, he's there every
oh,
single year.
that's great.
Every single year. Like just so yeah, that's another
Anyway,
story,
hold on,
but
hold on a second, hold on a second. So, in one of their episodes, they have a whole discussion about adaptation, and I remember so clearly they say you have to get the soul right. You can update it, you can change the genders, change the race, you can change whatever the hell you want, but you have to get the soul of the original right. Whatever you do, whether you're adapting Superman or Dracula or Frankenstein or Ready Player One, you have to get the soul of the original right. Then you can change whatever you want around that because the core will be the same. Does that make sense?
And that's my point. I don't think they did that with 1979. I feel like they call it. It feels like cosplay. It feels like cosplay. It feels like yeah, you got the guy to look like him.
Yeah.
I don't feel the vibe of that 1920. I don't feel the
Definitely. The
vibes.
atmosphere is different. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't
Yeah.
feel the vibes of the 1922. What I like about Eggers, and again, you'll find out, is that they brought back the intimidation of Nosferatu, the actual like overwhelming dread of being in his presence.
Amazing. And
Yeah,
Edgar's so good at that, right?
that is what I'm talking about. Like. And again, anybody who's expecting when you go in to watch it, remove any preconceived notion of the first like it, because it doesn't look exactly like 1922.
Okay.
But he made it his own. And he brought back the intimidation and the overwhelming fear of being around stuff like this creature that is just strange to be around. This presence that just makes you uncomfortable and squirm and unsettling to be around that individual. That's what I like about the third one. I don't think it's captured in number two. I don't know, not number two in the 1979 remake. I just don't think it's there. I think it is. Yes, it's quiet, it's meditative, it's a slow burn. It's also just not scary. It's not scary, and it should be scary. Nosferatu should be scary. And he wasn't. I wasn't creeped out by him.
Okay.
So.
Good conversation, John. This is great. And I really like that. Even though we were talking about these three movies, we still touched on so many other versions of the Dracula story, right? Because
Yeah.
we talked about Last Voyage of Demeter. We talked about Bram Stoker's Dracula from '92. There's also a couple other silent versions I'll mention. The Hands of Orlok, I think that's 24, 1924. Then there's also Vampire, which I don't remember when that was. But there's a couple. There's in the silent German silent films, there's like four or five versions of Dracula, and just this like little the 1920s era. Nosferatu is probably the best of them, but there's so many, and each of them are so different and so stylish and so unique. So there's lots of stuff to check out.
The only other one that I could think of that kind of like, took influence from Nosferatu, and I think it's a little bit of an underrated vampire film, 30 Days of Night. You ever
Oh,
see
I haven't
that?
seen that. No, I haven't seen that.
30 Days of Night. It kind of takes a little bit of influence from
I see.
that visual look in Nosferatu.
Great. This looks cool.
I think it's a bit underrated. It's not great, but I also think it's underrated. It's an underrated vampire film.
Good stuff. Yeah. Just talking about vampire films, I was just thinking about Marvel and Blade.
It's not gonna be good. I'm sorry. I have no faith in Marvel doing vampires. I have zero faith in it. I got no faith in it at
Oh,
all.
it's sad. Someday.
Well, we could go on a rant about that, but the one thing that I know is that a company like Disney, they're not gonna take the same risk as a studio like 20th Century Fox before they
Yeah,
got bought by
true,
Disney.
true, it's true.
Or a studio like New Line Cinema that made the first Blade. You know what? It
Yeah.
is not. Was it New Line Cinema? I want to be
It
sure on
was,
that.
it was, it
Yeah.
was, it was, yeah.
That's the one thing that scares me about that project, because it takes a studio that's going to take a risk to bring the crazy for a story like Blade. And I don't think Blade's going to work at Disney Studios,
No, they have
personally.
to. They really have to. No, I'm an optimist. I'm an optimist, but maybe there's a reason why it's not getting made.
No, I think that's exactly the reason why it's not being
Yeah,
made.
yeah.
Because I think every time they turn in a script, somebody at Disney goes, "We cannot produce that." I think that's exactly what's going on. Is
Perhaps.
that, you know,
Remember,
I mean,
Poor Things. Poor Things. It was officially released by Disney, so that's the world we live in now.
yeah.
Walt
Well,
Disney's Poor Things.
Poor Things.
Poor Things.
Well, that wasn't Disney. That was Searchlight Pictures. Which, to give them credit, no, actually, I want to give them a little bit of credit, because it seems like Disney is a little more hands-on with Searchlight, because they want to get in the awards conversation, you know? So it seems like they leave that alone. Marvel, not so much.
So just
Not
to be
so
clear,
much.
so this new Nosferatu movie, is this is Universal, right?
Is Focus Features, which is a
Focus.
Universal label.
Okay.
It's good, dude. It's very good. It is the most stressful time I've had in theaters all year long. And
Happy to hear.
I mean that in the best way possible. You're going to squirm, you're going to bite your lip, you're going to be enthralled, and yeah.
So as we head into this holiday season, we have Christmas in just a few days. Have a wonderful time with your family watching Nosferatu.
Bring the children, everyone, bring
Bring
them all.
the children. Great.
Yes.
All right. This was great, John. So thank you all for watching. If you like this discussion, big discussion, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. Tell us about your favorite vampire movies, your favorite vampire books, your favorite version of Nosferatu, your favorite version of Orlok, your favorite version of Dracula. Tell us everything. And are you excited about Robert Eggers' new movie? Let us know. Let us know in the comments below. And then you can find me on Twitter at Ben Writes Words.
I'm John, and you can find me at John Movie Watch on Twitter and Blue Sky.
And be sure to follow thecosmiccircus.com on Twitter and Blue Sky at My Cosmic Circus, where you can find more reviews, articles, editorials, and fans like the one you just watched. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Bye.